and welcome to Our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and so we have reconvened our panel from last summer. We did a show on this topic, and so let's go round table and everybody introduce themselves.
My name is Katie Sanford. I am a community educator from Laurel House in Montgomery County.
I'm Katie Young Wilds. I'm the Senior Communications Specialist at Women Against Abuse, which is located in Philadelphia.
And my name is Toby Fraser. I'm the manager for the education team at Lutheran Settlement House, also located in Philadelphia.
Let's begin this with, what is a definition of domestic violence? What is it actually?
That's a great question to get us going. So at Lutheran Settlement House, when we talk about domestic violence, we're looking at a pattern of behavior that's aimed at getting power and control over one person in a relationship. And so the really important part for us in that is that it's broadly speaking about that power and control piece. So you can do a lot of things to someone, unfortunately, to control their behavior, to control their actions, get them to do what you want. And we're looking at any type of those actions, any type of abuse, as being part of domestic violence.
So this is financial. This can be verbal. It can be physical.
Yeah, definitely. So Toby mentioned that there's, you know, a lot of actions that can be done. When we think of domestic violence or domestic abuse, a lot of times we only really focus on that physical violence because we can see it. We can see the effects of, you know, someone being physically harmed by their partner. But we don't often see or talk about the other types of abuse. So we can have abuse like economic abuse, forcing your partner to not have a job or to give your entire paychecks to your partner, and they are the one that controls all of the money in the relationship. You don't have that control. Even if you're the one making that money, you don't have that control over it. Or emotional abuse and mental abuse and gaslighting and just really tearing you down, making you feel worthless and making you feel like you are not enough or that you're an awful partner. Or even with now the advances in technology, using that technology to stalk, to intimidate, to harass, it really makes it ongoing. If you're away from your partner, you're not away from the abuse because they can use technology to get to you, to access you, to have that power and that control.
And this can include also isolation.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. I think isolating a partner from their family, their friends, their support network is all part of this, so that they don't have as much agency to reach out and get the support that they're looking for. And it's difficult because intimate partner violence often occurs in a cycle. So, you know, typically the relationship starts out in a good way. The person might fall in love. The relationship might begin to escalate very quickly. So maybe you find yourself moving in together sooner than you were planning. Maybe there's an unplanned pregnancy. Maybe, you know, there's so many ways that a relationship can escalate. But sometimes it can happen very subtly and without you realizing that your partner was perhaps intentionally picking up the timeline of your relationship. And you feel like very kind of trapped in that relationship. And then you add on top of that the isolation and then the abuse. So oftentimes you start out in what's called the honeymoon phase. The relationship escalates, the tension builds, and then there is the abuse. And that can be a physical attack, as Katie had mentioned, you know, that's the most obvious, but it can be verbal, it can be psychological, it can be spiritual, financial. There are so many layers of it, and they often co-occur as well. So you could be experiencing all this for the first time, and let's say it was a physical attack. So you're hurt, and then after that is the reconciliation phase. So your partner might profusely apologize, say it will never happen again, say, look how much I love you, I was so jealous. Or they could gaslight you, as Katie mentioned. They could say, I didn't push you down the stairs, you tripped, you know, making you question the reality of what had happened. So then the reconciliation kind of cycles you back through to the tension building, the abuse. So that cycle makes it so very difficult to leave because you're seeing the good side of your partner. You're having good times. Maybe you have children together. Maybe your home is together. Maybe you're financially dependent on one another. So there are so many things kind of tying you to this person that can make it really difficult to break free, especially if you're being isolated from your other support networks and feel like you have nowhere to go. You know, people often ask us, well, why doesn't the person just leave? And kind of puts the onus on the person who's being abused to leave. And we say, you know, try to put yourself in that situation. If you right now, whatever relationship you're in, if it was abusive, how easy would it really be to just leave? You know, and when you think about your personal circumstances, your family, it's a very sobering thought to think about just how difficult it really is to break free.
The onus is on the person being abused. When you discover or you suspect that something is wrong, we look at the victim and, well, why didn't you leave or what's happening? Why didn't you stand up for yourself, et cetera? Why didn't you take control of the situation, da, 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 da. We put all of the action on the victim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another way to reframe that question of why don't they just leave is to really ask, why does this person act abusively? Why are they using this type of violence against their partner, against someone they say they love? And to really put the onus onto the person doing the action as the person who needs to stop the action. And so we know, thanks to our friends at the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, that 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men will face some type of domestic violence in their lifetime. So it's happening so often, and just putting all of that blame onto the victim to say it's your responsibility to stop this other person from harming you is truly, it's painful to hear about.
Is there a litmus test that you can apply? I'd heard of the wheel of control, but is there a way that you can realize that you are in an abusive or an unhealthy relationship?
I would say what you said, that power and control wheel, is a great way to, you know, take stock of your relationship and see if there are any of those behaviors that are trying to take power or control away from you in your relationship. So looking at it and reading through, obviously there are red flags, but you know, not every red flag is going to immediately mean that you're in an abusive relationship. So looking at those tactics that are common among abusers in that power and control wheel. So super easy Google search. If you just type in power and control wheel, it'll come up, and there are some variations of them for teens. There are some that talk about, you know, using male privilege. But when we get into a victim who might be a male or a same-sex couple, that piece of the wheel isn't really great to think about when you're, you know, two males or you are a male being victimized. So there are some gender neutral ones that are out there that are super, super great. And I'm sure that they're on all of our websites as well.
Well, you just mentioned teens, and that is an area that we overlook a lot of times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It can be difficult to be an adult looking at a teenage relationship and believe that it's a serious, committed, love-filled relationship. Some of us are so far from being teens ourselves that we like to infantilize and consider teens just kids, not doing anything real. When in fact, those can be very committed relationships, and the violence can look the same there, and teens can be acting out what they're seeing in their parents, but also just in our popular culture that doesn't have many good examples of a healthy relationship.
When we see this, when a child sees this, what is the impact on the next generation and then the generation after that?
Well, we do see an intergenerational cycle oftentimes where children who are growing up in abusive households, some research shows they can be more likely to find themselves in an abusive relationship as an adult because that level of violence becomes normalized for them over time. However, I think it's important to also note that that cycle is broken every day. And that's why we do the work we do, because we've seen survivors break that cycle for their children, for themselves. We've seen amazing things of hope and transformation of people, you know, relearning how a relationship can be and what consent means and what kind of boundaries they're comfortable with. So I think, yes, a word of caution, there is research that suggests an intergenerational cycle, and we've seen that among some of our clients. But at the same time, it's certainly not a lost, you know, not a lost cause. So if you are experiencing abuse or you have, you certainly don't have to feel like that is going to automatically happen to your children. Like, you have the power to stop that cycle and to model a healthy relationship for them.
Before we get into how we should react as friends, as family members of someone who is going through this, we should actually go around table and, again, talk a little bit about your organizations. Katie S., you want to start?
Yeah. So I, again, work for Laurel House. We are a comprehensive domestic violence center that serves people who live or attend college in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, which is right outside of Philadelphia. We offer a variety of different services, from shelter locations to individual and group counseling. We have a lawyer and a paralegal on site to assist with filing protection from abuse orders or custody if there are children involved in this abusive relationship. We also have a 24/7 365 hotline and a text line that runs Monday through Friday that anybody, even if you don't live in Montgomery County, can call into, ask questions if you are concerned about yourself or a family member, or just need to know how you can help somebody or interested in our services.
Katie, what about Women Against Abuse?
Sure. So Women Against Abuse is a domestic violence agency in Philadelphia. Similar to Laurel House, we try to provide a comprehensive spectrum of services. So that includes emergency safe haven, a legal center, education and community prevention, as well as a transitional housing program, as well as a community-based, we call it the Safe at Home program, to help people who are transitioning back into their own homes in the community. And I should specify that even though our name is Women Against Abuse, we serve people of any and all gender identities and sexual orientation. So we really want listeners to know that we strive to be a welcoming place for all, anyone who's experiencing intimate partner violence. And we've been doing this work for, I guess, 45 years now. So it's been a long time, a lot of change and growth. But the work, it continues. And we're just honored to be part of it.
And we know that Lutheran Settlement House has a long history here in Philadelphia.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Lutheran Settlement House was founded back in 1902, but had very different services then compared to now. So our bilingual domestic violence program gets to partner with Women Against Abuse, that we're very lucky and fortunate in that way, to help answer the Philadelphia Domestic Violence Hotline and refer clients and survivors as needed into that safe haven. And then at Lutheran Settlement House, we're able to provide counseling on an individual and group level. We have a children's therapist to work with those kids that we were just talking about who've witnessed domestic violence in their parents or in an adult in their life, how to heal from that trauma and move on from there. We have youth services working with teens who have been abused themselves, as well as going out and doing their prevention work in schools. And we have a really robust training program to support other professionals in allied agencies and organizations to learn about domestic violence, how to support survivors themselves and get them into the DV-specific agencies, as well as community trainings to bring other people just out in the world, in the neighborhoods, in churches, and other groups, up to speed on how to support survivors and not replicate the abusive dynamics in those attempts.
And if you are listening to this and you are not in Philadelphia, in Montgomery County, there is a national hotline number, 1-800-799-SAFE. 1-800-799-SAFE. It's 24 hours a day. And you can call that number and someone will be on the other end to talk to you about your situation and where you happen to be at that time. So you just mentioned supporting survivors of domestic abuse. How does someone get help? Is it when someone either reaches out and asks, or when someone else says to them, I think that you have, or asks, are you having a problem?
Out in the community, people get help by, reaching out to those empathetic folks in their life. And so I'll speak for and to the people who are being reached out to. So if someone comes to you and says, I think I'm being abused, what do I do? Or I'm not sure. Or if you see something happening in the relationship that makes you a little worried, the main thing that I would like to encourage folks to be is that empathetic ear, to not try and replicate the abusive dynamic, to not try and control the other person and say, well, this is what you have to do. You have to leave them. You have to get into shelter. You have to, with lots of finger wagging. That just puts you right in that same box as the abusive partner, controlling their behavior, not letting them make their own choices. So the most important thing to do as a supporter is to think about what do they want and to ask that question, how can I be there for you? Right? Be really supportive and say, you don't deserve to be treated like that. It's not your fault. How can I help? What kind of support are you looking for? And then do all that you can to make it happen. Those hotline numbers that we all have are there for supporters as well as survivors. And definitely we get calls all the time from people saying, this is happening to my neighbor or my congregant, and I'm not sure how to help them. What can I do?
Well, let's talk about a bystander who's seeing this situation.
Yeah, definitely. Before I get into that, I do want to touch on, you know, earlier we mentioned about putting the blame on that victim and asking them, well, why didn't you just leave? When someone comes to us or we witness abuse happening within someone we know's relationship, we don't want to say, why didn't you come to me sooner? Or, you know, I know your partner, they would never do that. We want to just be that empathetic ear and not put that blame on them for not coming forward sooner, things like that. But if we want to get involved and we want to, you know, intervene, there's so many different things we can do. And it starts with, you know, just letting them know you're worried about them, not pointing a finger and judging, but saying, I'm concerned for you. What can I do to help? And we really want to, you know, take this as our own personal responsibility as well. We don't want to witness something and not say anything. And it can be just going up to our friend or a family member that we're witnessing these acts in and saying, what can I do to help you? Or it can be calling Laurel House or Women Against Abuse or Lutheran Settlement House and saying, you're the expert, how can I help? That's still doing something without, you know, making it worse for the victim. Because sometimes if we intervene in different ways, it can have the inverse reaction of what we are hoping to do. We're trying to keep them safe, but really we're making things worse for that victim.
So the victim is now picking up the phone and calling. Say she or he is calling on their own behalf. They're still living in the home. Maybe they haven't even decided that they are ready to leave yet. And for various reasons, again, children, financial reasons, etc. Some people don't choose to leave the relationship. But the phone rings, you pick up the phone, and there's someone on the other end. What's the process at this point?
Well, we do something called safety planning, and I think it's a fair bet that any domestic violence hotline you call, the counselors will be trained to safety plan with you. Mm-hmm. And so as the caller, you get to direct, like Toby had said, what would you like in this situation? You know, if you're not ready to leave, what can we do to help? And so a safety plan kind of takes a person through their specific situation and helps them put a plan together to keep them and their children as safe as possible, whether that means staying or leaving the relationship, staying or leaving the home. It helps them identify strategies and things they can do to de-escalate tense situations. So, for example, during COVID, I mean, we're still in COVID, but at the onset, when many of us were quarantined or in stay-at-home orders, hotline counselors were often using strategies of how can you de-escalate the tension in your home? Maybe walk to the park was one of the few things that you could still do, right? You could take a walk or try to stay in a room that doesn't have any weapons or sharp knives, like avoid the kitchen, or try to be somewhere where you have an exit if you need to run outside. So different strategies. And of course, those would be completely customized to the caller. Some of what I mentioned might seem really dramatic and really dangerous. But in some situations, maybe it's more about, techniques and strategies for psychological abuse or verbal abuse or financial abuse. And so different different goals and different strategies will make up a person's safety plan. And that's just helps better equip that person then and gives them some power, gives them some control over the situation. And so, yeah, that would be probably the first step.
Now, the person has left. Maybe they are on your doorstep. Counseling, legal help, housing, all of these. And again, when we talk about the legal, children, financial issues have to be settled.
Yeah, when they're on our doorstep, I mean, it all starts in the same way of what kind of support are you looking for right here and now? So if someone is looking for shelter or safe haven, then we're connecting them in that way to the shelter that's run by Women Against Abuse here in Philly or by Laurel House in Montgomery County or whichever county you're in, there's almost certainly some form of domestic violence safe haven. And if there's no space there, then we're talking about safety planning around going into a homeless shelter if that feels possible and safe for you, or asking about friends and family members you could stay with, saying, do you have family anywhere in the country or world that you would like to go to, and can we help you get there? But it's all very much following the lead of and the direction of the survivor in that moment. Same for counseling. Some people in the scenario you were mentioning, Laura, who aren't ready to leave or not wanting to leave, because we know a lot of our clients, what they want is the abuse to stop, not necessarily the relationship to end. And so we work with groups like Cordea that support people who are causing harm in a relationship to undo that, to learn other ways to be in relationships and stop being violent. And then we'll work with survivors in those moments who don't want to leave to get them connected with our counselors, have an intake, and then come in for sessions or do virtual or phone, whatever feels safe. But again, it's always coming back to what does that survivor want in the moment.
And counseling has got to play a big part of recovery, and that would have to include the children too, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely. For us specifically at Laurel House, we start our counseling at age 14. So anybody who is a victim or a witness, 14 and older, can join those individual and group counseling sessions. But we also have the, you know, children's playroom or activities we do with the children in shelter to have that therapy without sitting down with someone talking about things. Especially when they're younger, they are seeing a lot of things and they know more than we often think. But sometimes a sit-down therapy isn't really the best way to talk to a five-year-old who just really wants to, like, color. And so we have all of these crafts and toys and things that we can sit with them and talk and give them those strategies to cope with what they're seeing or talk about what they're seeing in a way that doesn't feel so clinical.
You know, I didn't even mention this or ask about this. If somebody leaves the home and ends up on your doorstep, what if they don't have paperwork? What if they have no money? What if they've got kids with no diapers?
Yeah, I mean, that is the reality for many of our clients. Mm-hmm. Many people leave with just the clothes on their back. Maybe they grab a diaper bag and a few items. But, you know, sometimes the situation is so dangerous, they just have to get out. And we always say, we can help you replace anything that you leave behind. You know, the important thing is making sure you and your children can get out safely. And leaving, we should mention, leaving can be a dangerous time in the relationship. So part of the safety planning is if you have the luxury of planning ahead of, you know, maybe setting aside a go bag with some key essentials. But like just keeping that in perspective, knowing like that's not necessary. You can come with the clothes on your back and we will welcome you. We'll have a warm meal for you. We have toiletries and clothing and anything you could need. So I think we just, all of our agencies try to be that welcoming respite. And, you know, we've worked with many clients on getting identification or if they need to get medications refilled, things like that. You know, it's always unique to each client, but all of that can happen once you're safe.
Now, how do we get involved? In our last 5 minutes here, what should we take away from this? How can we also support you? Toby, you mentioned that sometimes there aren't beds in the shelter.
I would hope that people take away an interest in learning a little bit more. So the way that we can do that with the help of Lutheran Settlement House is inviting people to find us on eventbrite.com. which is spelled B-R-I-T-E at the end. Eventbrite.com is where we organize and publicize all of our trainings for community folks as well as professionals. And so inviting people into learning more, perusing any of our websites and the resources that will be there about how to support someone, how to recognize the signs in a relationship you're in or a family member is in, but really to put on those glasses sometimes throughout the day and look around and say, what is happening to me or the people around me? And then what can I do about it? What do I feel capable of providing or offering? And maybe a training will help you find some of that new level of skill that you didn't realize you had before.
What's the iPledge?
Yeah, so October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So it's a great opportunity for listeners to maybe move from just learning about domestic violence and hearing about it to diving deeper, really truly understanding it through training or getting involved as advocates. I think all of our organizations have events and initiatives coming up for Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and iPledge is Women Against Abuse's version of that. It's a social awareness campaign, and we ask people to take a pledge against violence, that they will not use violence, that they will believe survivors, and that they'll speak out when they see it happening in their community and be advocates. We're having an event in person and virtual on October 6th. If you live in Philadelphia and you feel comfortable coming in person, we'll be outside at City Hall. Otherwise, you can join us on Facebook live stream, and you can get all of that information at womenagainstabuse.org.
Well, I know Laurel House has plenty of opportunities for volunteers to get involved on many levels.
Yeah, definitely. So just echoing what Toby and Katie said is, you know, learning about domestic violence and how to help, and then taking it one step further and actually acting on that education that you have. But to go back to what we said about, you know, the people who come in to our shelters with nothing, donate things, clean out your closet and bring them to our thrift shops or, you know, your pantry and give it to any of the shelters around you, because we are able to offer, you know, those free clothing items, those free pantry items to people who show up with absolutely nothing because of the generous donations from people in our community. But for Domestic Violence Awareness Month, we have a few different activities going on. We do our 5K every year. And this year, since we are still dealing with COVID, we will be doing it virtually across a whole weekend. So you can join from wherever in the state, in the country, in the world, from October 15th to October 17th. We'll be posting people's journeys and their routes and pictures of them running. We're also doing a few different webinars and learning opportunities that can be found on our social medias. And we're also looking to collect stories from survivors or people who have been impacted by domestic violence to give light to, you know, that everyone knows somebody and it impacts everyone in different ways.
Toby?
Yeah, for Domestic Violence Awareness Month, you can definitely check our website, lutheransettlement.org. We're doing a lot focused on the Fishtown neighborhood where our agency is this year for our in-person work, and then doing a lot of virtual trainings and webinars as well, which are again at eventbrite.com to find all of those offerings.
And of course, if I am a church leader, if I have a community group, if I even have a scout troop, if I'm seeing something and I would like to learn more, of course, I can reach out to any one of your organizations. And of course, anyone can always feel free to pick up the domestic hotline, the national domestic hotline number, and that is 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-SAFE. And here, very quickly, we are going to recap everybody. Katie Young-Wild, she is the Senior Communications Specialist with Women Against Abuse. If you would like more information about everything that they offer, womenagainstabuse.org. Easy, womenagainstabuse.org. Katie Sanford is a community educator for Laurel House. They are found at laurel-house.org, laurel-house.org. You can find out about their thrift shop there and, of course, all of their events. Anything that you've heard today, you can find on these websites. Toby Frazier is the manager of community education for Lutheran Settlement House, and they are at lutheransettlement.org, lutheransettlement.org. Thank you all for coming back.
Thanks for having us.
Good luck on all of the events for October Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And again, remember the national hotline wherever you hear this that will direct you to your local agency, 1-800-799-SAFE. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Our Delaware Valley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.